Welcome to Analyst Talk with Jason Alder. It's like coffee with an analyst, but there's no actual coffee. Each episode, we interviewed an expert in the field of law enforcement analysis to share their career-defining stories and to get their insights on the world. Please join us on recognizing and learning from these brilliant minds as we define the law enforcement analysis profession one episode at a time.
Thank you for joining me. I hope many aspects of your life are progressing. My name is Jason Alder. And today, our guest has 35 years of crime analysis experience. Yes, 35. The last 24 years have been with the city of Kissimmee in Florida. She's also one of the founding members of the Florida Crime and Intelligence Analyst Association. She is on the training committee of the IACA, and she's also 6 months away from retirement. Please welcome Mitri Lewis. Mitri, how are we doing?
We are doing great, Jason. Thank you for having me.
Very good. 35 years. So you spent 4 years in Orlando. Yes. It looks like about 7 years in Melbourne. Yes. And the last 24 in Kissimmee.
Yes, sir.
And wow. So what is the secret to your longevity?
The secret to my longevity is to be patient with people, to remember that everyone doesn't think like I do, and just to be humble in this position. You need to be humble.
Very good. So I guess I want to first just go way back when and go in our little time machine here, because you started out as a dispatcher. Tell us how you went from dispatcher to analyst, and because I do want to ask a couple of questions of like the pros and cons of coming in as a dispatcher.
So I started with the Orlando Police Department as a dispatcher and doing dispatching 911 as well as dispatching officers. And then I went on maternity leave. I came back. They were advertising for a crime analyst. Well, knowing that I had my degree in criminology, I did put in for it and was lucky enough to get the position. And I was one of three, and we were the first three analysts to ever be hired by the Orlando Police Department.
What were your tasks in the very beginning?
We really had no training and really no idea of how we were going to do analysis. But our daily task started with reading reports. And when we would come in from the weekend, we would actually have paper copies of the weekend's reports. And then we would just build from that. We each had a little matrix form that we had created for ourselves that allowed us to collect data in a certain way. We would handwrite these matrices out. Then we would go to plotting the data on the maps. And yes, it was very manual, and we were one step up from using pens. We actually used paper dots that we wrote dates on, so we would know when an incident occurred by looking at the date.
So you're creating these matrix, and mm-hmm. Is that basically establishing MO?
That was establishing MO, and it was establishing basically the geography. So we had one for every patrol district that we managed. So I managed the west side, so I had a matrix for each beat on the west side. Okay. And then I also had it broken down into MO. So that I would know if I had the same thing going on in different patrol areas, but on the west side.
So were you doing this for all crime types?
Or just all crime, all part one crimes. So rape, robbery, murder, burglary, auto theft, those kinds of things. Yep.
All right. I have never created a map that was like a poster on the wall. So kind of take us through that a little bit doing that.
It was a fun day. We had what we called map day. So basically, we had four maps that were 8 feet by 4 feet. So, and they were on a rail so that we can slide them back and forth. So if I wanted to look at just residential burglaries, I would slide all the other maps to one side so I could look at just residential. Now, there was a technique to understanding what happened. We could only look at data 60 days at a time. So we would have what they call clear acetate, and we would put those over the paper maps. And like I explained before, we would put dots on the map with dates on it. And then when it was time for a new month, we would just put another sheet of clear acetate over the map and start with a new month. And what we understood is the dots that we could feel were the new information, and the dots that we couldn't feel was the old information. And that's how we kind of understood the geography of an incident.
Okay, so I'm trying to envision this. So you have this map, and then you have this basically this clear layer.
Yes.
And each clear layer represents a month.
Yes.
And so it's literally layers. Like if you're building a map today, you have different layers that you can turn on in the computer.
Yes.
But this is more physical layers
more
in that
physical.
There's it's a clear sheet of paper and representing each month.
Mm-hmm.
And you can you are you also writing notes as well?
Well, we would write the date of the incident. So we had a robbery map, and on that map we also plotted homicides. We also had a rape and residential burglary map. We had a vehicle and auto theft map. So we could plot those different crimes using different colors on the map.
Is that four different maps then?
Yes.
All right. And then so those were on, I guess, rollers to where you could move them back and forth?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then what else in particular that you can think of was special or about doing this kind of mapping? Because this is just something I think a lot of us have maybe seen it on TV or seen it maybe in older shows, but never have experienced it for ourselves.
If we found that we had, like I said, I managed the West Side districts for Orlando. But if we realized that we may have had the exact same MO in the Central District or on the East Side, we would actually use string and pins to connect those incidents so we could actually see how the person might be moving or what we could learn from just looking at the geography of these incidents.
So are you taping up the string?
Yes. Yes. Taping it from one incident to the other. It was a very manual process. Just plotting the crime on a daily basis took about an hour. For instance, you can imagine a city Orlando size, and it's gotten a lot bigger since then. We would come in to like 300 or 400 reports from over the weekend, and all of those things had to be plotted.
It
took a lot of time to plot. Yeah, we spent a lot of time plotting and just trying to create our matrices and those kinds of things. So back in the day, it was very, very manual, and we were very, very fortunate to be able to get out any analysis after we'd done all this manual labor.
Wow. Because you also said you're reading all the reports and creating the matrix first.
Yes. Yes.
So Mondays are pretty much, we're already filled, right? You're not, no scheduling meetings on Mondays at this time because you're working on the data at that time.
Correct. So about Wednesday, we were, able to take a breath and breathe and actually begin some analysis. And what was very important for us is that we communicated with each other on a constant basis to make sure that we were not missing something. So say I had a suspect in a burglary who was wearing a tan hat, a red shirt, and blue jeans with purple sneakers, and someone in the Central District or East District had the same kind of suspect, it was important for the analysts to talk to one another to make sure that we were not missing something.
And so then you are relaying your information to patrol or the investigators.
Yes.
Are you presenting? Is it a written report?
How
are you?
And it was a written report, and we, you know, now you can use email and all kinds of things to draw attention to your bulletins. You can write terms like situational awareness or anything, but you have to remember, we didn't even have a smart terminal that you could do typing on. So all of our bulletins were manually typed by our secretary, and we had to tell her by color how urgent it was. We told her to type the bulletin on pink paper, or type it and copy it onto pink paper. That meant that this information was urgent. If we had her type it on yellow paper, type it and print it on yellow paper, then it was less urgent. And green was more informational. And we were all excited when we got our first terminal that we were able to type things up and save things, save bulletins and things like that. But we also had a weekly crime meeting in which we presented information to patrol and to the criminal investigation division. We had a weekly crime meeting to go over information. So it was a very, very manual system, but it worked. But it worked. You know, when people talk about, oh, if I get one more email or if I do that, I said, be grateful for email. Be grateful for, you know, mapping programs that you can just click a button and bring up a layer. Be grateful for those things, because back in the day, back when Mark Stallo and myself and Noah Fritz and a few others were coming along, we didn't have all of these tools.
How long were you making the maps by hand?
Ooh. Well, most of my time there, so at least 3 years we were everything by hand, and then I left. I don't know how much longer after that they were still doing things by hand.
Okay, so this is 1985. This is 1985 to 1989 mm-hmm. range. All right. I usually ask people about their badge story. You know, their career defining case or project that they worked on. And it's during this time in Orlando that you had your badge story, correct?
That is correct. So as a dispatcher, I took at least 5 or 6 calls involving a serial rapist. And he targeted young mothers in a particular area who were single. And he always picked these women who had young children who were not speaking. It was very heart-wrenching to, you know, take those calls, but not know how the situation ended. Once I got into crime analysis, I was able to know the end of the story. I was able to read those reports and start putting information together. Fast forward to about a year after I was in crime analysis, and we were able to come up with when we thought he might strike next. And with that information, patrol was able to make an effective arrest, and he was the first case that I testified in court about. That told me that having the information and being able to predict or project where a person might strike again is what made crime analysis so sexy to me.
Yeah, so let's get into it a little bit more. Give me a little bit more detail on that. So what did you know as a dispatcher that helped you later on as an analyst?
Well, we knew his target. So we knew we were looking for single women with young children. So it took our patrol officers to kind of go out and canvass the neighborhood and give us information about the women who were living in that neighborhood. Was it a corner house? Was it a house in the middle of the block? Those kinds of things. And then we also knew that obviously he likes striking at night. He likes striking later in the evening when these women would be putting their kids to bed, you know, settling in for the evening. We also knew that we had a physical description of the subject. So we knew who we were kind of looking for. So we encouraged our patrol officers to take FIs and turn those FIs into crime analysis so we could kind of put together a suspect profile of what we're looking for. How tall is he? Does he have an accent? Does he have any scars? Does he have this? And so if they FI'd a person that kind of fit that description, then we could have them go out and basically locate that person. And that's kind of how everything came together. We knew the neighborhood that he targeted. We knew basically the locations of his target victim. So we basically had to send out information to patrol to make sure that they were at least routinely going by the homes that we felt would be targeted. Now, we didn't have anything that could actually tell us on the day of the week, because he would go sometimes as long as 6 weeks without striking. Oh, so okay. That kind of made modern forecasting ineffective. But we were able to say that he struck on the weekdays as opposed to the weekend. We had very few weekend hits. So it just was a lot of things coming together and making it possible. But I saw the power of crime analysis. I saw the power of getting information from the street, from those road units, and putting it together and making a document that officers could pay attention to and understand what to do with it.
How many of these cases occurred while you were still a dispatcher?
I'm not sure in total, but I know I personally, over my time in dispatch, took about 5 calls.
So you have this base information, mm-hmm. and these are the victims calling you, correct?
Yes, after the event, yes.
Okay, try to paint that picture for us. Like, what is that like, taking those type of calls?
Those type of calls are very, very difficult in the sense that you're talking to a person who's just been assaulted in their own home by an absolute stranger. They're worried about their kids. They're worried about the person coming back. They're worried about a lot of things. And it's your job to not only keep them calm, but extract information from them. You know, so where are you? Do you think the suspect's still in the house? And being a woman, I could put myself in their position and feel their anxiety. And I had to learn not to let that anxiety translate over the phone, mm-hmm. but to do the job that I was called to do, which was get information and get them the help that they needed right away. But it was very difficult. But on the other side of that, I understood this person, if it makes sense to you, I understood who we were looking for, what kind of person we were targeting, just based on the calls that I had received.
So then, and when you said FIs, you're talking about field interview reports.
I am talking about, yes, sir.
So now you've already said what your Mondays look like as you're trying to do all this, gather this information and mm-hmm. read all these reports. So now you have a whole other layer of data that you have to go through with all these field interview reports.
Correct. And so, those were yellow dots. Those were yellow dots that we put on the map.
Did you actually build a bulletin and had a profile and had, you know, MO established before he was arrested?
Yes, we were able to, you know, sitting down with the investigators and ourselves and patrol, we were actually able to put together information that was a pretty good document for that time, you know, saying that, you know, we believe the MO is this, we believe that the target victim looks like this, we believe that he's in the last, you know, 10 incidents, he's always hit the house in the middle of the street as opposed to on either corner. So we were able to put together a lot of good information into one document that was distributed multiple times as we updated it to patrol and to the Criminal Investigation Division.
So how was he selecting his victims? Was he seeing them just on the neighborhood, or?
We believe that that's exactly what he was doing. He was surveilling the women in the neighborhood, that he was watching, you know, for some time, who came home alone, who did not. What he never wanted to do was confront a male, an adult male in the home. So all of these women were women who didn't have, you know, boyfriends or husbands or even older kids, right? Someone that would confront him. We believe that he surveilled these women for some time.
Was it patrol that picked him up eventually?
Yes, it was patrol.
You put patrol on notice, the mm-hmm. area, the time of day. Mm-hmm. And he gets picked up and arrested. How did you link him to all the different cases?
There was no DNA back then. What happened was, it was the victims, a simple lineup kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
That allowed us to pick him, you know, to basically make the arrest and make the arrest stick. He was identified by, I believe, and I'm really stretching my memory here, I believe mm-hmm. he was identified by four victims. He had some unique scarring, and he also had a unique accent.
So then what did you need to do to testify? Where does testifying come in?
So it was, you know, crime analysis was this new science. And so it was basically talking about the products that we had produced. How did you decide that this was the neighborhood? And how did you decide that this was the suspect? So I basically had to testify as to how were our officers able to, you know, be in the right place at the right time. It was, how did we arrive at this? How did they get to, you know, just a random rapist to somebody who was really targeting individuals? And I had to explain just how we looked at data and narrowed down the field. And so it was kind of a quick lesson in crime analysis. And that's basically all they wanted to hear. It was very short. I was very happy that it was very short.
So did you get any cross-examination by the defense?
No, but I really believe it's because he didn't understand, or like I said, crime analysis was very new. And so, you know, trying to explain how we got from point A to point B as clearly as we could took some doing. But I think, you know, now people are so, you know, CSI savvy, and they've watched Law and Order and everything else, they're more apt to understanding what analysis is about.
So have you testified since, or is that your only time?
I testified one other time, and it was really silly. It was a divorce case. The two parties were, well, you know, they were in upset about who was living where. And so I basically had to produce crime statistics for where each party was going to be living, because one was trying to say, it was really silly. One was trying to say their neighborhood was safer than the other person's neighborhood, so that the child in question should spend more time in the safe neighborhood and less time in the, you know, unsafe neighborhood. So I just basically was asked by one of the parties to produce crime statistics for both areas, and I had to testify that to that work.
So then you eventually get your own computer. You get a job where you have your own computer, and you're doing maps, and you have access to records management systems, and you can now search mainframes and databases.
All of that, yes.
And you've established a career of studying the data to mm-hmm. identify patterns and trends.
Yes.
You know, you're an analyst in a small agency for most of your career. Mm-hmm. After leaving Orlando, it was as you were the lone analyst, mm-hmm. you know,
right.
The lone wolf, so to speak. And so talk about your process of coming up with the patterns and trends and recommending where to focus, you know, in the intelligence-led policing aspect of your job.
When I went to the Melbourne Police Department, as you said, I did have my own computer, had access to records, although most record management systems didn't have all of the fields that crime analysts would be looking for, those details of was it the front door, the side door, the rear door, what kind, you know, what window was it? Was the window smashed or was the window pried? All of those details, those MO details that really, you know, help analysts narrow down their focus, those programs didn't exist. So I ended up learning how to use Microsoft Access, and I built my own database. So I would enter each morning, I would come in and have the paper reports because our records people were always days behind actual activity. So I still had a process of receiving paper reports, but now I'm entering the data that I want into my Microsoft Access database. From that point, I could actually use programs like MapInfo to load up the information so I could see it, you know, geographically, and I could use different things like MO to see where my vehicle burglaries with the smash window are occurring. Is there a pattern? Is there a trend? So still a little bit manual in the sense that I had to, one, create my own database, and two, I had to enter that information manually. But once it was entered, you could really begin to see how things were coming together. So by Tuesday afternoon or Wednesday morning, I was beginning to see things, and I could go back as far as I wanted to go back. So I could go back 6 months and see if this pattern was consistent and start my analysis from there.
Then how does that translate into today? Because today, now we have records management systems that are geared to crime analysis. And so now in your everyday, you know, just kind of go through your week as you're working today.
So today I use a lovely program by Motorola called Command Central, which allows me, I don't have to read reports. I mean, but I still do as a matter of, okay, let's be sure of what's going on. But I don't have to. I can literally come in, sit down, and start analyzing crime as I drink my morning coffee, because everything is present there. The information from the night before has already transferred over into the Command Central database, so I don't have to wait for somebody to enter it. Once the officer has pressed send, that report is in the RMS database, so there's no more waiting. There's no more data entry on my part. So I immediately can come in and I start analyzing. And I start with basically property crime, because for the city of Kissimmee, property crime is the leading crime that occurs in that area. We praise God, we do not have the rapes, robberies, or homicides that Orlando or Orange County experiences. We have people who like to steal things, and so we study who's doing that. And what's really nice is the FIs that they do that night or a week ago or 6 weeks ago is also just another layer that I can add to the burglaries I might be looking at. So then if we get suspect information from a burglary and I see a FI that matches that description, I can look into that person immediately and see what kind of history they have. And now I can do a simple email and say, hey, be on alert. This person has a burglar history. He was FI'd in this area 2 nights ago, and we've had, you know, 6 burglaries in the area in the last 6 weeks. And that takes, depending on how deep I want to go into the person's history, that can take maybe an hour.
Does your RMS give you all the information that you need? You had talked about building your stuff in Access. Now, were you influential in getting that established, or was that the shelf?
Well, it's off the shelf in terms of it's a program that you can purchase. But as far as setting up what fields you want the system to collect, I, as the end user, had established that. And so now when the information is transferred from the officer into the records management system, it has everything that I'm looking for. This program is so nice that instead of me looking at dots or colors or anything like that, if I want to see all, I can just do keyword searches. I can put in smash window. I can put in Hispanic male. I can put in cement blocks. And so all of the crimes that involve the cement block will appear, and all those reports will appear on my screen, and so I can read through them and see what's in common.
Does it do the same thing for names? So if you put one name in, it gets
Okay.
What were some of the fields that you had them add based on your recommendation?
I always wanted to know method of entry and point of entry. That's always very important in turn, especially with property crimes. How difficult is it to, you know, you can only break into a car basically a couple of ways, but are they punching the lock, or are they smashing the window, or are they prying the doors or windows? You want to know that information. And obviously, for more serious crimes, like if we were having robberies to any great degree, who are the targets? Are they, you know, men walking alone, women walking alone? Are they happening in the street? So location is always important. For us, the patrol beat is always important. Are they happening in apartment complexes or single family dwellings? So those kinds of things, I had the system separate out as separate fields so that I could query those fields using those keyword searches.
With the data and all those different types of data that you just established, is all of those like drop-down fields, or are those open-ended, they can type in whatever they want to?
They're open.
Okay.
So we have an actual search bar, and you can just type in those different words, those keywords, and it will, you know, it searches the database for whatever time frame that you've asked for. They have some built-in time frames like the last 30 days, the last 90 days, the last year, but you can also customize your time frame. Say, I just want to know from June 1st to June 19th. How many vehicle burglaries I've had and where the window was smashed. And so I would put in the search bar smashed. It would produce those vehicle burglaries that had the window smashed.
But it, with it being an open-ended answer, then that means they can write in whatever they want. So if they misspell smash, or if they describe it differently, that's not going to come into your search results.
I understand what you're asking me. So as far as MO is concerned, those fields do exist. But when I say I'm doing a keyword search, I'm actually doing a keyword search on the narrative of the report. Hopefully they're not spelling the word smashed wrong in the narrative of the report. But yes, we found that officers are not good at filling out those MO fields. Even if we make them mandatory, they have found a way to get around that. The keyword searches are on the narrative of the report, which makes it so much easier.
What are some other best practices that you can recommend for someone that's just going through the data, reading the reports, trying to find patterns and trends?
So you want to, time, especially if you're alone. So you want to make sure that you have processes in place that don't take up a lot of time. So because time is your enemy when you're by yourself, because what invariably happens is you'll get going, you've got your process down, whether you have your own database or whether you're using a system that allows you to look at crime like I do immediately from the RMS system. You want to have those practices in place that say, hey, I'm only going to spend so much time doing this, and try to avoid going down the rabbit hole as we put it. You know, mm-hmm. you'll get a lead, you'll find, you'll get caught up in trying to find an individual because you know you've seen him or seen that name or something, and you'll spend more time than you really have in order to get the task done. At the end of the day, you really want to be able to have produced a product or several products that say, this is what crime analysis has to offer for you today. Whether it is a summary of the incidents that happened, whether it's a formal bulletin or email saying, hey, you need to pay attention to this person. You really have to guard yourself in terms of time. So you want to have processes in place that don't eat up your time.
Do you think you have to read all the reports?
I think you have to make a decision in terms of your agency. What do we need to focus on? For our agency, as I said before, we learned very quickly that burglary was the main issue. So vehicle burglaries, residential burglaries, business burglaries, those are the things that make our community unsafe, if you want to use that term. Mm-hmm. It's not the homicides or the stabbings or anything like that. We have far more burglaries happen. And this is for any agency. You have to figure out what the driving crime is. What crime is your locality experiencing more than any other type of crime, and then focus on that. Because obviously, if you drive down the rate in which vehicle burglaries are happening or residential burglaries happen, not only do you drive down your crime rate overall, but the citizens are impacted in a positive way. If there's not people breaking into my house every 5 minutes, then I feel more safe. If they're not stealing my car, then I feel more safe. And that translates into feeling I'm in a safe neighborhood or my community is safe. So you really have to determine from looking at the crime from the past, what is driving the crime rate in your jurisdiction, and then focus on that.
Do you think it's easier coming from a smaller jurisdiction, given that you are going to have a limited number of new cases to go over each and every day, and right. that you can basically establish the zone in which criminals are going to work from? Whereas, you know, think back to when you were in Orlando and you had, the West Side? You just had the one section and you're trying to do that. And you know, a lot of criminals won't just do stuff on the West Side. They're doing it Central. They're doing it East Side. Correct. They're doing it all over the city. So in that regard, it makes it more difficult to have the time to digest, for lack of a better word, all the cases.
Yes. So being in a smaller jurisdiction, you obviously can see it all. At some point, it can become overwhelming, you know, if you're trying to focus on everything. If you're the lone analyst for 100 officer department, because what happens is your time still gets, stolen from you, but you get delegated to other duties. Your chief might have you not only running a statistical report for him, but somebody else might come in and want you to do something else for them that takes away from your time to focus on crime analysis. So it's very important that you establish a process of contact. Our agency has a crime analysis form. So if you need something from crime analysis, you literally have to fill out this form. It's electronic to... You have to fill out the form, and the form goes through our chain of command to make sure that that's something that you actually need crime analysis to do.
And that's just to limit your exposure, right? And not and not stretch you too thin.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. So because, you know, time is not your friend. So especially when you're by yourself. But you do get to a place where all right, I'm not having that much activity. This is where I say you can explore and you can go back into things that you didn't have time to look at the time, but you knew that there was something there. So now you can go back 6 weeks and review your FIs from that time and say, yes, that suspect is probably going to be responsible for these crimes. You have the luxury of actually doing analysis if you're not always being inundated by, you know, tons of reports. You can actually focus on some things that you wanted to focus on. And I always say experiment, explore, dig into those things that you didn't have time to dig into on Monday, but you knew something was there. Take that time to do that.
All right. I want to switch gears a little bit. You're one of the founding members of the Florida Crime and Intelligence Analysts Association. Talk a little bit about how that got started and how you got involved.
I was working for the Melbourne Police Department. They didn't often think about sending the analysts to training, but I was fortunate to been selected to go to a Steve Gottlieb class, and it was the basic analysis class. And this is the first training I had ever had in my career, and I'm so glad that they decided to send me. So the class was in Vero Beach, which is in Indian River County, Florida. My friend Kim Poole and her agency hosted the class. And so I was going to get to meet analysts from all over who were doing, you know, what I was doing, and we were all taking this training class together, having different conversations, learning from each other. It was just really an exciting time for me. So I actually still have this piece of paper. I put a piece of paper and I said, if anyone is interested in continuing this kind of training and these kind of conversations, sign your name. And about 20 people did so. And from that sheet of paper and those 20 people, we started the Florida Crime and Intelligence Analyst Association.
So wait a minute, let me get something straight there. This was in Melbourne, right? So
I was working in Melbourne, but the class was in Vero Beach.
What I'm getting to is you worked as a crime analyst for how long before you had your first set of training?
So 10 years, maybe.
Holy cow.
So, right. So, because 1985. Yeah, I was a dispatcher. 1986, I was an analyst. So from 86 to 95, no training, just what I learned in college.
Yes. With the 20 names that you got from the training, how did you all communicate?
I made phone calls. And we met, the five of us met, and we became the first board members. From there, we literally got a list of addresses of all of the agencies in Florida, all of the sheriff's departments and all of the city police departments. And we sent letters to those agencies asking for information on their crime analysts. So you can imagine some agencies had none and some agencies had a lot. So somebody like Dade County, which is where Miami is, and something like Broward County, where Palm Beach is, they were very used to analysts. Even Orange County had, I think, about 15 analysts by that time. Larger agencies had a lot more analysts than smaller agencies. Some agencies had none. But we got a good response back. And so we built a database using Microsoft Excel, actually, on all the return letters we got back. So now we had a good database of analysts. From that, we decided that training needed to be the main focus of the Florida Crime and Intelligence Analyst Association. We decided that pretty early on because everybody was hungry for training. They were hungry. How do I use Excel, you know, in the best way possible? How do I build a database using Microsoft Access? How do I do the simplest task in crime analysis? Like, how do I put a bulletin together? And all kinds of things. We worked very hard for the first 2 years getting information, and then we decided on a process that we would hold training sessions quarterly training sessions, and we would move about the state because our members were in different parts of the state. But we decide on a topic. So if it was Microsoft Excel and, you know, tips and tricks, we would move that training throughout the state so that people could take advantage. And then once a year, we had an annual conference. And the first annual conference was in South Florida. Steve Gottlieb was our first keynote speaker. We went from there, and that's pretty much been the process. I was on the board. I was involved on the board for 15 years of our 25 years. I just stepped back these last 10 years and let the young people have it.
Well, very good. Now, that's pretty impressive and a really efficient way of getting that training that everybody was so hungry for in a time when you didn't have the internet. You didn't have all these ways that we have to share. You're doing it by telephone, and you're doing it by postal mail, trying to exchange information and get this off the ground.
It was exciting. It was an exciting time. I think if there's anything that I feel good about in terms of a legacy, it is the Florida Crime and Intelligence Analysts Association. They have gone so far now in this last 10 years. We were the first organization in Florida to offer certification. We actually, as a group, came up with a certification process. We did testing, I think, for 4 years before the Florida Department of Law Enforcement took over. But we were the first. And I have to say that these young people, they're kind of returning to that. They found an organization that offers some training and can do some certification. So I think that they're going back into that. But what I say these young people, because they have thought of ways to keep our name out there and keep excitement about the organization that I know I wouldn't have thought of. And this is all volunteer. The members of the board and the members who serve on the committees, it's all volunteer. You know, between your day job, you're doing work with this organization. Now we can actually buy things online, like buy t-shirts and hoodies and all this kind of stuff that says FCIAA on it. And I just love it.
All right. Well, let's take a break. When we come back from the break, I think I've asked enough questions, so let's hear from our audience. We're going to take your calls when we come back. This is Analyst Talk with Jason Elder. We'll be right back. LEA Podcast is proud to announce another podcast is now available on our website. Analyst Corner Podcast, hosted by Debbie Osborne, ran from 2008 to 2009. I highly recommend the episode featuring Brian Hill. Brian Hill passed away in 2018, and he helped me out tremendously when I was a younger analyst. In the episode, Brian gives some great advice, suggesting who you should take out to lunch in order to get access to better mapping data. To listen to all the episodes from the Analyst Corner, click on the link at the top of our website. That's www.leapodcasts.com.
Hi, this is Matthew Smith, and I have a public service announcement. When you are walking in a building and somebody is coming behind you, please hold the door for them. Give them that common courtesy. And at the same time, if somebody is holding the door for you, just say thank you. It just drives me crazy when people don't say thanks. It's one of my pet peeves, and I think if we all just got along and said please and thank you, we would get a lot further in this society. Thank you very much.
And we're back. Before the break, we were talking with Mitri Lewis, who was taking us back in time and doing physical maps on a wall and moving from dispatcher to analyst and being one of the founding members of the Florida Crime Analysis Association. I want to actually take some calls from you. I think I've asked enough questions now, so I want to just take some calls and see where we go. How's that sound, Mitri?
That sounds great. Let's do it.
First caller is Mark. Mark, you're on the air. What's your question?
If you do more tactical, strategic, or administrative crime analysis?
I do more tactical crime analysis. I basically produce products that allow our officers to address emerging crime trends immediately. So definitely more focused on tactical than anything else. Being alone, though, I had to focus on some strategic as well as administrative crime analysis. So I've done it all, but our main focus is tactical.
Yeah, and I think that's getting back to that crime analysis form that folks have to fill out at your agency. That's when you can really get yourself in various directions if you don't have a system in place. And you're doing all kinds of administrative stuff or strategic stuff, and you can just really wear yourself thin.
Yes, you can.
All right. Caller, you're on. We'll go to the second caller. Caller, you're on there. What's your question?
Hi, this is Sam, and my question is, what innovation do you think that that has come along in the past few years has really changed law enforcement and maybe changed your job, but generally changed the direction of law enforcement in this country?
Oh, that's an interesting one. Innovation. Well, I guess... For us, it would be the use of the laptop in the cars, because that allows us to communicate with the officer on the street in an immediate way, and it allows them to get the reporting to us much faster. So we're not waiting for paper to be entered into a system. It's all very seamless and almost immediate. I think the use of the laptop would probably be the most. Second to that would be mapping, because the way that you can do mapping on the fly and add different layers, just create what you need to create in order to do great analysis. Those two things, I think, are the innovations that have moved us along quite a bit.
Well, I can see from your perspective how mapping would be a great innovation.
Yes, automatic mapping, because you can create a map out of anything, but it's the automation of mapping that has really helped us, and being able to make smart maps that really show great things, because some officers are very visual. So you can tell them there have been 15 burglaries in this area and not show a map, and that means nothing to them. And other officers really get it when you talk about the MO and, you know, the time of day and the day of week. They digest that information very easily. And so you have to have both in your products.
Let's go to the next caller. Caller, you're on the air. What's your question?
Jason, this is Sally, first-time caller, long-time listener, and I got a question for your guest. How do you get buy-in from skeptics?
So you have to have success. You have to have a success story, something that says, you know, I gave this officer this information, and he went out and was able to effect an arrest or make contact with a person of interest that helped us, you know, solve a series of crimes. And or you found a detective gave you a phone number, and you were able to not only find the person attached to that phone number, but you were able to find their social media accounts, find out where they were living, find out the baby mama's name. You were able to attach all kinds of intel to that simple phone number that made him able to go out and take the next step. So you have to find that person who believes in you and believes in what you're trying to do, and then make him or her a success, and they will spread the word for you.
Very good. Very good. Let's take one more. Caller, you're on the air. What's your question?
Hey, my name is Sean, and I wanted to know, when did you think you made it as an analyst?
I'm still waiting for that. So I think I made it as an analyst when a captain came to me and said, I now understand what you do. And because he understood what I was doing or had been trying to do, he was my cheerleader. He went out and made sure that other people said, if you want to be successful as an officer, you need to speak to the crime analyst because she has information that's going to help you be successful. And that's exactly what he did. So now I feel like that salesmanship on his part meant that I had arrived, that people really respected what I did and the work product that came out.
Well, the last question that I have is, look, I know you're 6 months from retirement. You've put in 35 years to this profession, and I want to just personally thank you for your contributions and all that your work that you've done. So what does retirement look like?
Retirement looks like I won't come home and, you know, fall into bed and sleep for a year, although that sounds good. I have two projects that are near and dear to my heart. So the first project is basically, in this 35 years, I have seen how the homeless are affected by crime. They're often victims and the suspects in a lot of the crimes that I have dealt with. And so it's about a need. And so one of the things that I hope to really get involved in is a project to help not only homeless people reclaim their lives, but do something with the vacant buildings that are in everybody's city. So my hope is that we will be able to take one of those buildings and turn it into a center for the homeless. And what I mean by a center, a place where they can come, sleep, get a meal, shower, wash clothes, do the things that we take for granted, and reclaim their lives in a real meaningful way. My second project is a book that I have been trying to write for quite some time. I hope to settle down into a routine and get that book written and published.
And what is the name of the book and what is it about?
The book is about healing for lost girls. So basically, the title makes you think it's just for girls, but it's really for women. I think that women have lost their way in trying to compete, maybe trying to one-up men. I think God had an intended purpose for us, and I think we've lost our way, and I just want to help us get back on track. So that's what my book is about.
And what is the title?
Healing for God's Lost Girls.
I wish you the best of luck in both those ventures. It sounds like you're just going to continue to do the same thing and help people, Mitri. Very unselfish of you, so thank you again. All right, so the last segment is Words to the World, so that's where I give the guest the last word. So, Mitri, what are your words to the world?
For analysts, I say take those mental break. You know, we use a lot of our left brain to do the analysis work and the right brain gets jealous. So we need to do some things that help the right brain not be less jealous. So play games. Color. I love the adult coloring books because that really takes your mind in a different direction when you're coloring. Do those things that allow you to imagine, because when you come back to doing the critical thinking, your brain will be in a place where it can imagine. And believe it or not, when you're trying to solve a crime trend, you really need to use your imagination. Take mental breaks and do it often.
Well, I always tell everybody, you've given me just enough to talk bad about you later, Mitri. Thank you so much, and you be safe.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on Analyst Talk with Jason Alder. We hope you not only enjoyed the show, but also learned something new. For more information on our guests and information relating to today's topic, please visit our website at leapodcasts.com. Special thanks to The Rough and Tumble for our theme song. For more of their music, you can visit their website at theroughandtumble.com. Also, thanks to Kyle McMullen for our show logo. For more of his design, please visit his website at moderntype.com. The show is hosted, recorded, and edited by Jason Elder and written by me, Mindy. You can contact us both via the LEA podcast website. Please join us again next time as we interview another expert in this great field.